Amen. So we'll take a look at 1 Kings chapter 11 again. And as I said, we'll start reading. We'll read about half a dozen verses or so here in verse 26. And Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephrathite of Zerudah, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow woman, even he lifted up his hand against the king. And this was the cause that he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Millo and repaired the breaches of the city of David, his father. And the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. And Solomon, seeing the young man, that he was industrious, he made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph. And it came to pass at that time, when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem, that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way, and he had clad himself with a new garment, and they too were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and rent it in 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, "Take thee 10 pieces. For thus saith the Lord God, the God of Israel, Behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon, and will give 10 tribes to thee." So here we have a familiar character, right? Jeroboam. I could think of countless sermons that have been preached on him. And even today, I got to imagine that across the globe, we've got hundreds that are probably going on right now that involve this man and some of the things that he did. Here I want to take a look at something specific with Jeroboam. I want you to take a look at this point in his life. We have, it's the beginning of his story, where he came from. In a very short period of time, what do we say, about half a dozen verses there, he went from a nobody to a somebody. And he learned of his destiny by a prophet here, that he will be the king over 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel. And that's an incredible task, if you think about that, for a man that came from nothing. So here he is, minding his own business, trying to do the best he can, it seems like. He's an industrious fella. He was made ruler over the house of Joseph. That's pretty good. And then out of nowhere comes this guy, Ahijah, and changes the course of this man's life. So as I said, we're going to focus today on this pivotal moment in Jeroboam's life, but I want to introduce another character who had a similar pivotal moment in their life. So let's turn over to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 16. And we'll take a look at just a couple verses, and you'll see who I'm talking about. So 1 Samuel 16, in verse 1, "And the Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil and go. I will send thee to Jesse, the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons." So let's go ahead and we'll read right down in verse 11. We went through a bunch of sons, finally getting to the right one here. "And Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? And he said, There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, Send and fetch him, for he will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, Arise, anoint him, for this is he." So we learned Jeroboam starting out, kind of a nobody, kind of gets some responsibility, going about his life, walking out of the city, and along comes this prophet. And in one short verse, that man's life changed forever. And here we have David, another guy out keeping the sheep, minding his own business, doing his job, potentially following God, following his father, and what he needed to do there. And along comes this prophet and changed his life. And I got to thinking, wow, we have quite the story here. These are two people that have something in common, you know? Normally we're hearing about Jeroboam and what he did and what went on from thereafter, and we also hear about David and what he did and what went on thereafter, but here we have two men at a similar point in their life. Let's look at a couple other things today, because I want to show you there's actually more parallels than just that. There's a few things that David and Jeroboam had in common, and I think we can learn something from that. So the title of this lesson is A Tale of Two Kings, borrowed from the Charles Dickens novel, though it has nothing to do with that. So, just for the sake of time and understanding, and so nobody gets a paper cut, we're going to stick with the story of Jeroboam, because I believe that the story of David is a lot more familiar to people. But we'll talk about Jeroboam and how he went through his circumstances, and we can contrast that to David. So let's go back to 1 Kings 11, and we'll stay with, like I said, Jeroboam's story here. David's is a much longer narrative. I'm sure God's saying something there when you have basically the better part of half a chapter for Jeroboam, and you have the better part of a book and a half on David. But like I said, we're gonna, if we could just today, I know you guys know how this ends. Put that aside and just look at two men, two young men who have been visited by a prophet and their life has changed forever. So 1 Kings chapter 11, let's read again verse 28. And the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. And Solomon, seeing the young man, that he was industrious, he made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph. Industrious. A mighty man of valor. We won't have to flip here, but 1 Samuel 16:18 said, Then answered one of the servants and said, Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite, that is cunning and playing, and a mighty valiant man, and a man of war, and prudent in matters. Many of the same qualities, right? You have a young guy here, both of them, potentially, we're assuming, I suppose, on Jeroboam, since we don't know much about him. You have two young men who are mighty men of valor, strong type, right? You know, the ruler type, those qualities that you want in a king, especially an Old Testament king. Think about that. These are hard times, you know. You've got Philistines running around. We've got all these, from Amalekites to Assyrians that are coming through and passing through. These are mean people. You need a mighty man of valor. These two both had that. Industrious, too. Jeroboam, industrious, I'd say prudent in matters for David. Same type of thing, right? They both had many of the same qualities, and those same qualities transfer to what you'd want in a king. So you can even go on a little bit further. Jeroboam was given charge over the house of Joseph. By who? Solomon. He was given charge over the house by Solomon, by the king. He was given a place within the government. If you can see, the king saw something in him, and he wanted to use those qualities to help his kingdom. That is what Solomon saw. Well, can't we say the same about David at times? Didn't he live with Saul for a while? Didn't he play the harp? Didn't he take care of certain matters? Didn't he have responsibilities within the kingdom? They both had similar experiences at this early stage in their life. Not only that, well, I'll get to that one. Let's move on to 1 Kings 11 again, verse 31. And another thing that I noticed that they actually have in common. Verse 31, he said to Jeroboam, Take thee 10 pieces, for thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon, and will give 10 tribes to thee. Well, thus saith the Lord. These aren't Ahijah's words. These aren't Jeroboam's words, and saying, I'm going to go take it. This is God saying, Here, I'm giving this to you. These are two industrious men with the qualities of a king who were chosen directly by God. We can say the same, again, we won't flip back there, but in Samuel. Samuel, talking to God, they were conversing. God says, Go. I'm going to tell you who this guy is. And went through all the sons of Jesse, right? And found the one. Found the one. He said, This is the one. Samuel, this is the one. Anoint him. Ahijah, this is the one. Take this garment, rip it into 12 pieces, and give 10 to this guy. God chose both of these men. And not only that, they were both visited by a prophet. They both had similar experiences that way. That prophet came out of nowhere. It said Jeroboam was just leaving Jerusalem. We don't have a whole lot of detail, but it appears he was just passing through. Ahijah catches him out in the middle of a field, kind of the middle of nowhere. It's just them two talking. He's like, Who's this guy with the nice new coat? And all of a sudden, boom, life changed forever, right? Jesse, he's out in the field. Or David, rather, he's out in the field. Dad's calling him. Better come in quick. You know, he was just doing his job. He wasn't doing anything special. And he gets this visit by a prophet? Samuel, nonetheless. pretty incredible, I thought. Also notice this. They were, that same verse here, 31. Behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to thee. They both got their calling when there was already a king on the throne. That's pretty incredible just in itself. Now think about that. You're a man. You're a young man. You're probably a nobody. You're out tending sheep, or you're taking care of the house of Joseph. Okay, so you're kind of known there. And all of a sudden you get a calling from God. And God says, you're going to take over this kingdom. Yep, God, there's a king there already. You know, how is this going to work? Well, they were told that they were going to do this. They didn't know how it was going to come to pass. They didn't know what was going to happen next. They didn't know what was going to happen to Saul. They didn't know the story that was going to happen there. David probably didn't even know all of what Saul had done to lead up to that point. Same with Jeroboam. I don't know that he even knew what was going on with Solomon and his disputes with the Lord and how he wasn't following after the heart of David, his father. Did he know those things? We don't know. It seems pretty scary of a thought, right? God says, you're going to be king. There's a king right there. And he's an established king, nonetheless. These aren't just kings that just rose to the throne. This isn't another 20-year-old man that's sitting across from you. This is an established king. Think of Saul. He was a tall man. He was a big man. And he fought wars. He was skilled. You know, David couldn't even carry his, what was it, put on his armor or carry a shield. I can't remember what it was when he was going out there, but it was too big for him. And here you have Solomon. Think of what Solomon did when he came in and took over for David and cleaned house. He killed Joab, you know? Yeah, Joab killed. That was the guy that'll give you a kiss and stab you in the stomach. He took over, and he had power. These were established kings that these guys were chosen under. So both of these men were hand-picked for the job, and I can reiterate this in verse 37, and I will take thee, these are the words of God, and thou shalt reign according to all thy soul desireth, and shalt be king over Israel by God over God's people. So think about that. You're just walking through the field, and you're going to be a king. Oh, I am. Yeah, over these people. Your people? Yeah, my people. Oh, okay, what about that guy? Okay. These are scary thoughts. These are mighty men. These are industrious men. These are cunning men. Even then, it's a momentous occasion to have sitting there. So let's take a look at another thing having to do with the king. So verse 33, because that they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in mine eyes and to keep my statutes and my judgments as did David his father. Why did Solomon lose the throne? He didn't follow God. He didn't obey God. We can go back to 1 Samuel. We won't because it's a longer narrative, like I said, and you kind of got to jump around, but what happened to Saul? Why did the kingdom leave Saul? Remember what happened there with the was it the Amalekites, I believe? I've got it written down there. It was So, hey Saul, Samuel says, go kill these Amalekites. Okay, so he goes over there. Well, these guys are kind of nice guys and they helped us a while ago. We'll let them go. And then we'll kill the rest. Okay, so they kill the rest. Samuel says, well, what about the sheep I hear? I told you to kill everything. Disobedience. It was disobedience that lost Saul the kingdom. It was disobedience that lost Solomon the kingdom as well. You see, these men, at this pivotal moment in their life, found themselves in very similar situations. So what happens next, right? You got this established king. We've got all these parallels. Well, is there anything else that they might have in common? Take a look at verse 40. When you have an established king, what are you going to do? Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam. And Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt, unto Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. He had to run. Remember anybody else who had to run? In fact, 1 Samuel chapter 19, through chapter 31, David's moving. He's moving. That's a long time. Both these men had to run away. wait a minute, God, you told me I was going to get this kingdom. Now I'm way over here. David went, where did he go? Philistine cities. He went all the way out he went west, I believe, right? He went all there. Not only did they run, they ran to places where God didn't like the people. God doesn't like the Philistines so much. What does God think about Egypt? Right? Same thing. Another parallel there. So, as I said, you have two men at a pivotal moment in their life where they've been chosen by God. They've been visited by a prophet. They've been explained some extraordinary things. They have the right qualities, right? They're valiant. They had to run away. Now here they are. Solomon's dead in verse 41. And the rest of the Acts of Solomon, all that he did and his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the Acts of Solomon? He's gone. Now he can come back. Saul died. David could come back. There's still some work to do. And we won't go through that story, but we know what David had to go through to consolidate the kingdom. We know what happens here. Rehoboam takes the throne, and then Jeroboam still has to come back and basically take those tribes with him away from Rehoboam. It wasn't just a done deal. He still had to do it. But what I'm showing you here is these guys started out in many of the same situations, with a lot of the same circumstances, with those same experiences. You have two guys, and they would have, and look at them, great kings, right? So far, we don't know what happens next yet, right? They got the right qualities. They probably look the part, okay? They let's think about this. They fled to foreign lands. They've got foreign policy experience. Why couldn't you want that, right? They got to be somewhat diplomatic if they stayed alive in those foreign lands, right? They have a mandate from God. What could be more powerful than that? So they're at the cusp of something great. Something great, not just in their own lives, but in the course of world history. What they decide at this moment will set the course for God's people, which is at the core of world history, which is what everything runs off of in our world, based upon the decisions that they're about to make right now in their lives. And we know, many of us know where this ends up, the next steps that come along, but think about that. This is the choice that they had to make. What will they do next? So, let's keep reading. We're going to go to 1 Kings chapter 12. We'll flip the page over and we'll see exactly what happens next. In verse 25, we'll learn about Jeroboam. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim, and dwelt therein, and went out from thence and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah. And they shall kill me, and go to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Whereupon the king took counsel, and made two calves of gold, and said unto them, it is too much. Oh, it's just too hard. It's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold, thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. He brought them back. Remember those calves? And he set the one in Bethel, and the other put he in Dan, and put this. And this thing became a sin. This thing became a sin. For the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. So the people went to Dan. What happened to the one in Bethel? Well, he kept that one for himself. I thought that was interesting. And he made a house of high places and made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. And we'll just skip ahead. You can read in verse 32, he kept the one in Bethel kind of for himself, and the people went to Dan. But this is what he did. At that point in history, when he could have changed things, he could have changed what Solomon was doing. He had that opportunity. This is the way he went. Right? Many of you know where that ends up and what that becomes. Let's just keep reading along those lines. We'll go to 1 Kings chapter 14 now. Chapter 14 will continue the life and legacy of Jeroboam. Looking at, let's go to verse 15. For The Lord shall smite Israel as a reed is shaken in the water, and he shall root up Israel out of this good land which he gave to their fathers, and shall scatter them beyond the river, because they have made their groves, provoking the Lord to anger, and he shall give Israel up because of the sins of Jeroboam, who did sin, and who made Israel to sin. He didn't just sin himself. He made Israel to sin. What a legacy there, huh? You know, it's one thing when your sins are your own. Some people have, we all face our own closet sins, right? The ones that nobody else really knows about, but kind of go on back here. It's a whole other thing when you cause a nation to sin, right? A whole nation to sin. That's not the end of it. Let's go to verse 20. Let's bump ahead to chapter 15, verse 25. He caused the whole nation to sin. And verse 25, and Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned over Israel 2 years. So this is Nadab, the son of Jeroboam. What does the Bible say about him? Well, verse 26, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of his father, and in his sin wherewith he made Israel to sin. Now we have a second generation. He made a nation to sin. He made his son to sin. And he started a legacy that continued on for a very, very long time. Notice it was in his sin. Whose sin? His father's sin. Nadab was walking in the sins of Jeroboam. It wasn't Nadab's sin. This was inherited sin. It kept going. It just kept going. Where did it go? Now, I'm going to skip ahead to 2 Kings. We're in the next book over. 2 Kings 15. And we'll see just how far this goes. 2 Kings 15, verse 27. In the 250th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, began to reign over Israel and Samaria, and reigned 20 years. And what did he do? Well, 28. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. We're in a different book now. This is, I think I looked at it, my Bible dates here were about 200 years later, a couple hundred years later, and they're still suffering from the sins of Jeroboam. What a legacy, huh? In fact, I counted, I did a little Bible search, and the Bible says 14 kings in all walked either in the way or the sins of Jeroboam, in one of those two things, which are essentially the one and the same, right? Nadab, Baasha, Omri, Ahab, Ahaziah, Jehoram, Jehu, Jehoahaz, Jehoahash, Jeroboam, they even named him after him, Zechariah, Menahem, Pekahiah, and Pekah. 14 kings and millions of souls were led astray by the sins of one man. One man who had a great opportunity. A similar opportunity to another man, right? It didn't have to be that way. It didn't have to be the way that Jeroboam took it. In fact, let's look at a different way that it could have been. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah chapter 9. As I said, the story of David covers so much ground, I didn't dare flip back and look through that. We'd be all over the place today. Let me see, talk and find where I'm going at the same time. Isaiah chapter 9, I love these verses, so we're going to look at verse 6. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom to order it, and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. Wait. Who are we talking about here? Right? This is Jesus Christ. Is going to sit down where? On the throne of David? The Son of God, God manifest in the flesh, is going to sit down where? On the throne of David. And over whose kingdom? His. Whose? David's kingdom, right? Two men who started out with similar experiences reached a pivotal point in their life. They had a mandate, a calling from God, and they took it two completely different ways. One led millions of souls astray. The other established a kingdom that Jesus Christ can reign over. Incredible. Both of them had God's blessing. Both of them were able to take and form as they pleased. God gave them a lot of freedom to do that. It wasn't that God wasn't watching, but he chose the man. There's a lesson in itself. A lot of side sermons I could have gone off of this, but he chose that man. He didn't tell him exactly what to do. He said, David, you're the guy. Wait a minute, you are the guy too there, Jeroboam. You're the guy. What are you going to do? So, this is a Sunday school lesson. I wanted to present those to you, but I just couldn't help but pull a few sermon points out of it. So, what can we do with this information? When you see two guys who had the same start, who went two completely different ways, it got me thinking about a few things. I feel God's asking me a few questions about what would I do with this information? What does this tell me? What does this speak to me? Or how can I use this? And pondering this over, I thought I'd share a few of these questions with you. The first one here is, what kind of a legacy are we establishing for the next generation? We've heard a little bit about generations lately. These guys had the opportunity to establish that legacy, and you see what happened. So how do we apply this for us? What are we doing to establish that legacy? Furthermore, if it were written down in an everlasting book that someone walked in your way, would you want to read that book? Would you want other people to read that book? You know, 200 years later, let's say your great-great-great-great-great 14 greats grandson, although it didn't quite work that way for Jeroboam, they got overthrown, the whole house was gone. Would you want your 15th great-grandson to walk in your way? Do you want him to write that in his journal? Yeah, I walked in the way of my father. What about if it was written down in a book for everyone to read? You know, what if this was public knowledge? Would you want people walking in your way? Are we setting the right example? We've talked about the generations and how we need to be cognizant of keeping things going, right? Of establishing something that's bigger than just us. We're establishing a church here that's now gone for several generations. Well, how much further is it going to go? What are we building there? And the inverse of that first question is, the inverse, as I said, are you following in the ways of your father? Now, that could go either way, right? You have a great father, you have a not so great father. I think about the Perlinger family. Some of you may know my dad, so I'll go back another generation, but there's not much to be said for the Perlingers. If I was said to have walked in the way of Albin, the son of Joseph, of the house Perlinger, would that be a good way or a bad way? There's not a whole lot to be said there. We're kind of a family of infighters, actually. At any point in time, about half the family is never talking to the other half, and then it kind of rotates around. They'll make up, and there's not a whole lot of legacy that I should want to inherit. You see, each of these kings, 14 of them, I read you their names for a reason, because each one of them needs to be held accountable for their own decisions. We all reach a certain point in our lives where we are accountable for our own actions. You go through your childhood and you learn from your parents. Right now I've got a young boy, Evan. He's a year and a half old. He knows nothing more than what I've told him. Right? That's fair. Does he know God's will for his life now? Does he know Dad's will for his life? Oh yeah. Yeah, he knows. And he learns every day. But does he, at some point he's gonna grow up. And he's got to realize and look backward and say, is Dad's way the right way? And do I need to continue this, right? So just because something's been going wrong in the past, in your history, whether it be with you, your father, your grandfather, maybe it's 14 generations back, some of these sins carry with a very long time. The first verse I ever learned when I came to Blessed Hope, It was way in the back. It's not even a Sunday school room anymore. It was the very first day I came here, Teresa Grissom's class. She had me memorize a verse. I'd never done that before, and I was so excited to come back. I'll tell you the story. So I was so excited to come back the next Sunday. I walk in the door. I'm going to get my star, right? I think it was a star. You get a sticker. I was only in there for like 3 weeks, and then I graduated. But Lonnie Hazard was in there filling in. I didn't get to recite my verse. I was so disappointed. But I still remember it. Deuteronomy 7:9, "Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations." God is faithful to 1,000 generations. So what about your generations? How far back do you have to look to where those traits are still coming through? We as Americans inherit a lot of traits, right? We're industrious people. You know, we're kind of the bootstrappers. We're in the Midwest. Many of us came from farming families, came from hard times in Europe. We've inherited a lot of those traits. What about any sinful traits? Have any of those come through? Drinking, maybe one of them that I think of that came through from the old country and is still here. You know, there are places that didn't have that kind of a legacy, that didn't bring it with them. That's very prevalent in the Perlinger family. That's about the only time they get along. So, but that's something that I know I needed to cut off at me, because that cannot continue. That cannot continue in my legacy. So, likewise, who's the David? Who's your David father? Maybe there's somebody in your past. Maybe it's not in your bloodline. Maybe it's not genealogical. Maybe it's a spiritual father. Maybe it's somebody who led you to the Lord. Maybe it's somebody who taught you in the Lord. Maybe there's somebody that can be a David in your life that you can learn something from and continue his throne. There were millions of people that followed the sins of Jeroboam. It wasn't just his sons. They all inherited that, right? They didn't have to go to the calf. They did. Some of them were just sheep led astray, but we all have our own brains. We all have our own minds. And let's look for a David. Is there someone in your life, or in your past rather, maybe they're still here for that matter, it doesn't have to be an ancient figure, it can be somebody who's here today in the same room even. Is there a David that you want to carry on their legacy? Let's take a look at one more verse here, 1 Kings chapter 11. 1 Kings, I'm too far. Back to 1 Kings 11. We're back in Jeroboam territory. And we're going to look at verse 37. This is very powerful to me. Verse 37, "And I will take thee, and thou shalt reign according to all that thy soul desireth, and shalt be king over Israel." Wow. All that thy soul desireth? So God didn't say, "Jeroboam, I want you to reign the way David reigned." David's dead now. There's a legacy there that he could have said, "Jeroboam, take this legacy and continue it on, but continue it on for Israel. Judah's already left us." You know, he could say, "They've already got their king. I have to keep that going, but you need to follow after David." He didn't say that. He didn't say, "Read the law that Moses gave you. Listen to the prophets. Follow the priests and the Levites. Consult with them." He didn't say that. What was his direction? "All that thy soul desireth." Wow. That's freedom, right? God picked the man. He didn't give him the full mandate. He said, "You're going to be king." He told him who he was going to be king over. He didn't say how to be king. He didn't tell him how to do that. He gave him a ton of freedom and liberty in that. I think a lot about us. I think a lot about the church age that we're in. The freedom that we have here in the church age. We don't have to follow the law. We don't have to follow all these commandments. We don't have to do much more than something simple to be saved, to receive the gifts of God, to receive God's calling in our life. We have to do one thing. That's where it begins, right? You can go back there right now, take a little piece of paper out of the rack, read it, understand it. You can even follow along at the end, right? As long as you believe it in your heart, you receive God's gift. That's all it takes. But what do you do then? What does God say to do? Well, he gives you a couple of things to do, right? He wants you to be baptized. He wants you to learn. He wants you to follow him. But he doesn't say, hey, you're saved, do this. He doesn't say that. He nudges you along, of course, but he gives you a lot of freedom in it, and he's not going to take away his gift. Did he take away the kingdom from Jeroboam? Did he take it away from David? No. Doesn't quite relate. But he didn't take it away from Jeroboam. He took away from his house. It was after the next generation. I think it was two generations later even. It was commanded that he's going to take it away. In fact, chapter 13, verse 34, I'll just read it for you. And this thing became a sin. This thing, remember that verbiage, this thing. What was this thing? It was those calves. It was taking the priests of the low people. It was being disobedient, not serving God. This thing became a sin unto the house of Jeroboam, even to cut it off and to destroy it from off the face of the earth. Gone. Just like that. That's what happened. But did it happen when Jeroboam was alive? No. A couple chapters over, he dies. He's all right. You know, his hand withers. He gets it back. Goes on, fights a few wars, does a few things, worships the calves. He keeps going. God didn't take it away from him. God gave him that. That was his gift. That was his mandate. That was his calling. We were all given our own gift, our gift of salvation. We were not told exactly what to do with it. Not exactly. We were given a lot of freedom in that. So when I think of Jeroboam, when I think of David, they were both given that gift. And I think of myself in the church age here. What should I do with that gift? There's also can be said with verse 34 that I read in chapter 13, with that gift that was given, there was an expectation. Though God did give him freedom in it, he didn't give him full and complete freedom. He said, this is what I want you to do. These are the tools that I'm going to give you to do it. You need to do it, Jeroboam. But he held them accountable for that gift. Just as he held David accountable for that gift as well. I can't think of a greater period of freedom than we live in right now. For that matter, a greater gift than we've been given. But we all face our own pivotal moment, right? We face our own pivotal moment where we've gone through some things, we've experienced some things, and we reach a point where we've got to decide what to do with that next. Even though we've been given the freedom to do what we want, we still have that expectation, and there are still consequences for what we do with it. Just as there were in the days of Jeroboam, we're not going to lose our salvation. You might not even lose your calling if God's called you to do something. He may keep you there. But at some point, we will all be held accountable, right? It's an important thing. So what I wanted to show you here today is that we all face decisions. We all have things that we have to struggle with, and that we all have an impact on that next generation. Here are two men, as I've said before, who started out very similar ways, two young men. They had a very similar calling, and they went two completely opposite paths. I have three young kids, and I think about that. What kind of a legacy am I establishing for them? Is this something that they can build off of? And I don't have all the answers, of course. This is something that continues on. In fact, you could say that Jeroboam in chapter 11 didn't have to be the same as Jeroboam chapter 12, chapter 13, chapter 14. He didn't have to be the same. He could have changed at any point. There was no reason that just because he built the calves, he couldn't melt them back down again. He had opportunities to do so. Remember when he built the altar and there was the... don't even know that it says who he was. He was just the man of God came and he cried against the altar. And Jeroboam, his hand withered. If you remember that story, there was an opportunity. He was given opportunity to repent and change. He was told a prophecy of what was going to happen because of his deeds. He didn't take it seriously. He continued on. Now the ways and the reasons why Jeroboam continued that way are numerous. We could go into that forever. In fact, we may not even always know. You don't know a whole lot about Jeroboam, and God probably does this for a reason. He wants you to know what's important to the narrative, to the story. Maybe Jeroboam was a great father. I don't know. Maybe he took care of his kids, played ball with them out in the backyard. Maybe he was great. Maybe he gave half of his riches to the poor. I don't know. He could have been a wonderful man to be around in that respect. But he certainly wasn't a great leader. And he certainly did not establish a legacy. So I'll ask you, as I close down here, what do you think about your legacy? And we've talked on Sunday, it was brought up. By the way, I was working on this message. I started last Thursday before Pastor preached on Sunday and before Jason went on Wednesday, about the generations and how we've become what we are and how the young people are still here. And Jason kind of continued that thought, him being a second generation Christian himself. And you know, what does this mean for us, and what kind of a legacy are we building, and what are we going to do at those pivotal moments? And then you personally, just as I was thinking, I hope you think about, what does that legacy look like? Who's the David that we can latch on to, that we can hold on to and learn something from? And continue that legacy for God's glory. You never know what he's going to do with it, right? Did David know that Christ was going to sit on his throne? There was 14 people that walked in the way or the sins of Jeroboam. There was only 3 that were ever said to sit on the throne of David. David, Solomon, and Jesus Christ. Only 3. Did he know he was establishing something like that? I don't think he did. He came from nowhere. I actually skipped over this point, so I'll readdress it since I've got a couple minutes. But the other thing I meant to say early on was, who was Jesse? Who was Nebat? These guys came from nowhere. Do we know anything about Nebat, the father of Jeroboam? No. I looked it up. We know nothing about Nebat other than he was the father of Jeroboam. That's it. The only time that man is ever mentioned is Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Period. That's it. That's the only mention we have of him. That's all we know. He was essentially a nobody. Who was Jesse? What do we know about Jesse? He's the father of David. He had a bunch of sons, had some sheep, kind of an everyday guy, right? You know, back then, everybody had sheep, everybody had sons. He wasn't, you know, he was a God-fearing man. We know a little bit about him in that respect, but as far as who he was in the kingdom at that time, neither of these men came from anything. They were just guys. Jesse is only mentioned, other than that part in Samuel, he's really only mentioned in genealogies. Jesse, son of Obed, or father of David, right? We got it in that line. That's it. So these guys came from nothing, had the opportunity to make something of it. So I hope you'll think about these things. I hope they've been a blessing to you. We're a little bit early, but I don't want to drag something out just for the sake of dragging it out, so we will close here. How about, is Naomi still with us? Should we sing one more?